Welcome to Access Advocacy on thepowerofvoices.com. I'm Adrienne Shapiro. The goal of Access Advocacy are to improve the lives of patients and caregivers who are dealing with the chronic illness of sickle cell disease. Today, we'll be speaking with Pat Corley, Marissa Kors, and Shabrianne Howard. Hi, everybody.
Hi.
Hello.
Hi.
Well, thanks so much for joining me. We are going to talk about Sickle Cell Month. As you know, September is traditionally Sickle Cell Month, so we're just going to talk about all the things that have happened and why things are so different at the beginning of this September as opposed to last year's. So I can start off. I can tell you what I'm most excited about. Well, one of the things right now. So I am so excited that we have Endari. It is the first medicine that we've had that's been created specifically for sickle cell disease. And I'd say that most of the people I've spoken to have had very, very positive results.
And I'm excited because for the first time, other people are excited about making a difference in sickle cell disease. ASH is doing incredible things. Organizations across the country are uniting to work hard to make a difference in the lives of people who are living with sickle cell disease. And people with sickle cell disease are living longer, so I'm excited.
I'm excited because I'm one of those people that's taking Endari, and so far it's working well, and it's making me much more energetic and less pain.
I'm excited about Sickle Cell Month because I, as a patient advocate, am, you know, lucky to be able to, you know, join together with other organizations, other advocates, other people who are interested in making change in the sickle cell community and being a part of that change myself.
Yeah, I have to say that we've had quite a few meetings in the past years where we get into a room with a group of people and we tell our stories and they look at us and they say, oh, okay, well, we didn't know. And it's either we didn't know that or we're going to help. And then that's it. It feels like we're giving testimony to support something or be a part of something that we're not really a part of. But I think in particularly the last 4 major meetings we've had people who are really there to do work and are committed. And we've had, I think, for the first time, all the players in the room who can really make a difference, as in people from the CDC, the FDA, the National Institute of Health.
There have been a lot of organizations. I'm celebrating right now. September is Sickle Cell Month, and Bold Lips for Sickle Cell always does this wonderful thing with lipsticks. And so I'm excited about involvement with them and people posting and just spreading the word about sickle cell disease, because for so long there was so little information out, and I would talk to people and people would share with me that they thought sickle cell had been cured in the 60s and 70s. So it's exciting to see that that we actually are making a difference with the work that we're doing through advocacy, spreading the word about sickle cell disease, cures, treatments, and new things on the horizon for sickle cell individuals.
I think I'm even going to have to put on some lipstick.
And oh, my God.
And have my photo taken. So we want you to do that. We want everyone to put on some amazing, colorful lipstick and take that selfie and post it.
And if Adrienne's doing it, everybody should be doing it.
Yes, everyone should do it. I think that's a great idea.
Well, speaking of great ideas, you're doing a poetry.
Oh, I am. Every Friday this month, there will be a Sickle Cell Poetry Live Fest on Facebook where people can come on, they can rap, they can sing, they can do art, poetry, spoken word, whatever, you know, whatever's on your heart, you could come onto the live event and show who you are.
I think I'm going to brush up on my poetry. You ready?
Please don't rap.
Okay, I'm going to let all of you not experience that. But we want to make sure that you're paying, looking at Shea Breon's Facebook page, which is?
Shea Breon Howard on Facebook.
She also has wonderful videos and has been working, I think, steadily for the last, 5 years at least?
Two.
Oh, and a half. It's only been 2.5. Feels almost like 5.
I know, right?
Shea Breon's, it's exciting to have you in California to help us with our big seminar that's coming up.
Yes, I'm excited to actually be a part of that and to be able to capture people's, you know, put people in the moment, people's joys, people's whatever they're feeling, pain, you know, just capture whatever it is that needs to be said.
Well, I know Marissa's been very busy. She's worked on a book and has done several videos lately. Marissa, why don't you tell everybody about your new book?
My new book is based on my childhood and other periods in my life where basically I'm just trying to illustrate the day-to-day decisions that people living with sickle cell have to make, because oftentimes when we get sick and we go into crisis, you know, we do our best to take care of ourselves at home, and for several reasons. One, you have a life, you have things to do. Being in the hospital's not conducive to that. And then two, the treatment that we get once we get to the hospital or the clinic or the doctor's office, and 9 times out of 10, the first question you hear is, well, why did you wait so long? And immediately the blame is kind of pushed onto the patient. And then from there, the bad experiences happen. So I decided to write a choose your own adventure book, in which each book is a different scenario. And in our first one, we have a little girl, and her name is Miss Riss, and she's just gotten out of the hospital, and it's her first day back at school. And unfortunately, she wakes up in a new crisis. And from there, the reader gets to pick and choose how she goes about her day as she's trying to accomplish a certain amount of things, knowing that this pain is going to continue to take over. And so you as the reader get to decide, what is she going to do? She wakes up in the morning, does she tell her mom, or does she go to school? Maybe she goes to school. And why is she going to school? She has a lot of things that she has to do. She wants to turn in her homework. She wants to see her friends. She wants to be picked for the science project, et cetera, et cetera. And as you go throughout the book, new characters are involved, and you see her struggle. You see her friend's struggle. And then you see her interaction with a teacher that's not very sympathetic or empathetic or understanding at all, for that matter. So I think it'll be a good tool to get conversations started with anyone, really, because at the end of the book, there's an entire reading comprehension section where you ask questions like, would you have done that? What would you have done differently? And I just saw a void in all of the books that I've read or I see coming out about sickle cell, where they're just explaining over and over again what sickle cell is, the actual disease, but none of it really gives any depth, an in-depth look into how we live, what we have to do.
Yeah, I think you're right. We've been collecting books for quite a while. And there is. I mean, actually, when I think about it, all those conversations we have with researchers over and over again as we try to relay the experience of living with this disease, and each time it's as if it's the first time they've heard it.
Absolutely. It's seldom that you encounter people who really understand the depth of living with sickle cell disease and all of the complications and the impact that it has on both the person with sickle cell disease and their family and their community at large. I don't think people really understand that it's not a disease that only affects that person who has it, but it changes the whole, you know, your whole life and your voyage your journey through life. You know, and it also changes the lives of parents who, for the first time, have to deal with a child who they had for 9 months anticipated being a child that was disease-free or normal. And now they're having an encounter with a child that has complications related to sickle cell disease. So I do think that it's important for us to share that kind of information, because I don't think we talk about it enough. We don't talk about the reactions of siblings of people with sickle cell disease and how it affects them. And just everyone who comes in contact with people with sickle cell disease and the perception that you're not going to live very long with sickle cell disease. And the fear of bonding with folks with sickle cell disease because they're not going to be around. So there's just a lot of things that need to be addressed. And sounds like Marissa is starting to address some of those things, and I'm excited about that. But I also want to give a shout out to all the nurses and doctors and healthcare providers and caregivers who are out there working hard to make life for people with sickle cell disease better, because I think oftentimes we get caught up in the negative aspect of care that people with sickle cell disease get, and we forget about the positive aspect. So I just want to encourage you to continue to do what you're doing. For those of you who still don't really understand sickle cell disease and are not involved, I want to encourage you to take an active role in making a difference in the lives of people with sickle cell disease. So I just want to thank you for even thinking about or considering doing that, because it's so important and you can really make a difference.
I want to say that now more than ever, we have so many opportunities to help. We have clinical trials. So we have clinical trials that are coming up, that are being carried on now, that are involve new treatments and new pharma. We have GBT, we have
There are a lot of them.
Well, you know. Yeah, Novartis. I mean, really big and small houses that are really coming up with new treatments for us. And on the...
It's amazing the number of pharmaceutical companies that have now become involved with sickle cell disease.
I think 15 the last count.
Yeah.
That we know of. 15. Where for so long we had
one. It's exciting.
It is very exciting. And I think that the pharmaceutical companies are reaching out and involving particularly the young warriors in the work that they're doing and supporting their projects.
Yeah, they are. People like Tosin, you know, is very involved with it. There are just a lot of folks.
The Warriors Group, that's her.
The Warriors Group.
Sickle Cell 101, Bold Lips, Six Cells. I mean, I never ever thought that I would see this.
Dominique is involved, you know, working with one of the pharmas. So it's exciting to not just be working on our own, but to have other people who are involved and encouraging other people to be active participants in research and just speaking out about sickle cell disease, speaking out about the positives and the negatives related to sickle cell disease. So hopefully we'll continue our journey and things will continue to get better now that they're introducing stem cell and all these other things that are going on in the sickle cell community.
Well, in the stem cell world, we've had a couple of things that are happening. We have several new trials that are partnerships between CIRM and the City of Hope is one. We have one that's continuing with UCLA. We have one that's going on in Stanford. We have one that's going on in Boston. And what I'm really seeing is that they're looking at it from so many different avenues and techniques. So we have those where you're doing that using your own tissue, right?
Right.
And a vector to change your bone marrow. They're using one with, they're looking at CRISPR-Cas9, where you're actually altering DNA. And very excitingly, they're looking at haplo, meaning half. So before we thought maybe you had to use only your material, your tissue, or you had to have identical. And now what they're looking at is you can use bone marrow or blood products from a parent, a sibling, a child. So the advances just within a year are really, really amazing.
Absolutely. We're moving forward. We're moving forward, you know.
And if you want to know more about what's going on in the trials, you make sure you go out to www.clinicaltrials.gov. And under there, you'll see the listing, type sickle cell, and you'll see the listing of all the clinical trials that are going on and see all the variety or types of treatments and cures that we're looking at throughout the country.
I think it's a great idea that people with sickle cell living with this disease have more of an option. You know, they don't have to, you know, die with this. They have the option to actually get, you know, a form of a cure and to live a better, more healthier life. So I think that's a step in the right direction. It's definitely something that wasn't around 5-6 years ago like it is today.
Yeah, I'd say it again, like the difference between this time last year, right, and today, when we think of who we've been able to speak to, who the advocates throughout the country are talking to, we're getting audiences with senators, with major legislators, even with everything else that's going on in D.C., sickle cell is really on the minds of many, many of the legislators, and that's never happened. Maybe in the 70s.
And I don't think it was ever predicted like it's being predicted now that we will have a cure in the next 10 years or so.
Well, NIH is saying 5 years.
Well, okay, 5 years is what they're predicting. But even if I could see a cure in the next 10 years, I'd be happy. So we're celebrating, even though we don't have the cure yet, because we're believing that that cure is inevitable. And that people are genuinely working toward the betterment of people who have sickle cell disease.
I will say it's very exciting to meet scientists and researchers that when I say I have sickle cell, their eyes light up and they're like, really? You do? Come talk to us. Come tell us about you. Are there more people out there like you? Like, you know, I'm just the one random person with sickle cell in the entire world. It's like there's a whole community. And yes, there's more than 100,000 of us. There's millions. But to have researchers be excited and to be just happy and positive just meeting us because they know what technology has. And maybe, you know, I call it like a movie moment where the technology finally catches up with your imagination and now you can tell your story the way you want to. I think technology is finally catching up with our scientists and our researchers' knowledge and imaginations, and they have the funding. Money's important, you know. they have the funding to make it happen. So that's very cool.
Yeah, I'd have to say that the young scientists in particular, this movement where they are, I think, in many ways leading it, the idea of sitting down and speaking with the people that they're actually trying to cure. I mean, I know that we've had in the last 10 years, well, even a bit before that, starting with AIDS, the whole movement towards patient advocacy and patient engagement. But I think this is the first time in history where you have scientists as they're forming and being trained and becoming these scientists have an urge or a respect for patients and their importance. And I think you're right, Marissa. I think it is the technology. I think the fact that the work they're doing is so intimate as they're talking about dealing with your own tissue and specific, for the first time, I think, really, really specific treatments. The idea of trying to do that without involving the patient would be impossible. And so going forward, medicine is going to become more and more like this.
I would agree.
This is Access Advocacy, and we're speaking with Pat Corley, Marissa Kors, and Shabrion Howard. We'll continue our conversation in just a moment on thepowerofvoices.com. Welcome back. I'm Adrienne Shapiro on Access Advocacy via thepowerofvoices.com. And today we're speaking with Pat Corley, Marissa Kors, and Shabrion Howard about the changes that we've seen in the past year in terms of advocacy for those living with sickle cell disease.
I think the fact that there's been a lot of warriors, sickle cell advocates, patient advocates that had the opportunity to travel to Washington is something, you know, worth speaking about as well, because, you know, they take time out of, you know, being sick and going through life to actually go and really speak for something they feel has an opportunity to change and impact things. And I just want to, you know, give a shout out to those people, because they're actually making progress and making waves where it needs to be done.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think that, again, having that voice where we never had it before, and I think a lot of it also comes out of the, as Marissa mentioned, technology, but things that youngsters are doing in terms of using social media, and that platform has certainly given us the opportunity to not only connect as a community, but to speak with a more united voice. And I think that the warriors are doing a great job of putting forth the work that you need to do, because it is work. Well, you know how hard work it is. It's something that you constantly
have noticed. You know, maybe a little.
Maybe a little. Especially, you know, like you said, when you have a life and you have a child. So yeah.
Being a single mother and a patient advocate is very difficult, but it is necessary, because without her, I wouldn't see the way things need to be versus the way they are. So, you know, I have to give it to her, my passion for being so driven and doing so much for, you know, this community to bring everybody together. That's what's important. The fact that we consult each other and have conversations with each other and, you know, talk about things that's needed, talk about what we feel needs to happen next and things like that. I feel like that's something great, you know, not to just say, oh, I feel we need this. What do we need? You know, this is all of us. It's not just one of us. So
Shabrion, as a young nurse, I took care of your mother, Adrienne Johnson. And so I'm excited about seeing the positive things that you're doing in the sickle cell community. Your mom would be so proud of you, having had sickle cell disease herself and knowing the challenges of living with sickle cell disease, and being able to raise a child to be successful who has sickle cell disease. I mean, I celebrate her, I celebrate you, and I celebrate the changes that have gone on as a result of what you're doing in the community. I mean, phenomenal.
Thank you, Pat. I appreciate that, especially coming for you. So thanks so much. Like I said, I didn't really have a choice. You know, it was either sink or swim. So I've never been a sinker.
And I think you are raising, I mean, really an Olympic swimmer in that little one of yours. She is...
That'd be something.
She is quite amazing. And so helpful. I mean, it's really interesting, this the strength that you see in that little teeny body. She looks at you and says, I could do it, and let me help. And she's right there with you. It's wonderful to see. It's one of those things where, you know, you can have challenges and you can miss the blessings and the magic that happens. And all together, we're able to see it and, you know, get more of the, as the baby said today, pixie dust.
You know, and I wish I could be as productive as she is now, as, you know, as a child, to help my mom the way that she helps me, because she really, like, helps a lot compared to that. For her to be four, she's like, oh, mom, are you doing the dishes? Okay, I wipe the counters. Oh, mom, did you just wash? Okay, well, can I load the dryer for you so you don't have to keep bending over? And, you know, oh, mom, are we going for a walk? Okay, let me go turn the air on. Let me make sure everything will be cool by the time we get in the house. Like, she's always trying to be thoughtful and think 10 steps ahead so that I will be in a comfortable position to take care of her.
She's amazing.
Yeah.
We won't warn you about what happens, though, in about 10 more years.
No.
She's going to stay this way forever.
Just keep sprinkling that pixie dust.
Yeah. No comments.
So do you have any suggestions to other mothers with children with sickle cell disease who are... you know, kind of maybe struggling a little bit?
Don't take it out on your kids. Don't take your pain out on your kids. Do not take your pain out on your kids. And I say that meaning. I say that because a lot of people, you know, men and women, they have this illness and they don't know how to deal with it. And sometimes you can project that onto your kids. I've done it before. You're human, it happens, but do not continuously, you know, pick on your child because you're in a helpless place and you feel that you can't help yourself. So you're angry with yourself, you're angry with the world. Your kids did not ask to be here. They love you no matter what you do, no matter if you turn around and you're in pain tomorrow, they're not going to look at you crazy. They're going to still love you. You're still mommy. You're still daddy. So what you can do is think of ways to be better when you are in pain. Think of things that you can do that, you know, okay, you can't take them to the park when you're having pain, but you can draw a picture with them. You know, there's different ways that you can take your pain and help them see their purpose and yours as well. You don't have to take it out on yourself or on them. That's the best advice I can give anyone who has a child with sickle cell.
And I'd like to add to that, teach them that it's not something to be ashamed of. Because I was very surprised this morning when I woke up for breakfast and the four-year-old said to me, you have sickle cell? I said, yes. She said, I have the trait. Your sister have the trait? Yes, my sister has a trait. Oh, we have the trait together. And she was just as happy about it, and like, it's not a big thing. And mommy has the disease and you have the disease, and but you guys are good. And I think back to when I was her age or a little bit older, I had friends who had sickle cell and they were taught to keep it a secret, and they were taught that it was something that they weren't supposed to tell people about because it wasn't something, you know, I don't know if pride is the word, but it was just like, we don't talk about it ever, you know. You just disappear from school for a couple of days, and anybody that asks you, you just tell them you ran away. I don't know. And you come back and pick up life where you left off and pretend like, you know, you don't have this major thing happening, you know, at home or in your body. And it's not something that you should be ashamed of. It's something that you live with and you work with, and in spite of, you succeed. That's new.
Piggybacking on what you were talking about being ashamed of it, I can remember when I first came into nursing and decided that I was going to work in the sickle cell arena. And many of my classmates had sickle cell disease. I had no idea. I just thought they were lazy and didn't want to come to class and didn't want to work, you know. And so they just stayed at home. And it wasn't until I started working in the arena that I realized that the devastation of living with sickle cell disease, and during those times, there was very little known about sickle cell disease. There's much more known now, and people are much more engaged with identifying good care. But I can remember working at the Sickle Cell Center at USC, and people coming in that I had gone to school with. And they were amazed to see me there, and I was more amazed to see them there because I just thought they were shiftless and lazy. So all these years later, as I'm retired and advocating in the community, it is so incredible to watch, because my whole movement when I came in was to get people involved in self-help and support and speaking out and being involved in their own care. And we've come the full circle, and we're now at a point where people with sickle cell disease have a voice. Some of the voices are a little too loud, but they at least have a voice, you know, and they're speaking out on injustices and requesting and identifying for folks providing care what they really need, you know. And so I'm celebrating life with sickle cell disease in a different way than what I originally encountered people involved in. So cheers for people living with sickle cell disease and living well, knowing what's necessary to live well, and exercising their right to receive good care.
And I think that's it. I mean, seeing that change, and I, like I said, I think really we had a shift from people feeling like, having that anger, right? And trying to use that anger to get what they needed, to more of a, I'd say, more thoughtful and strategic way to use their voices so that we could get what we needed. And I think you have to have a squeaky wheel, right? Because the squeaky wheel gets the oil, right? I think that's what they used to say all the time. So I can see it now progressively, and how at this point we are, you know, we're not only, how can I say it? We're not only in the room, but we have a seat at the table now. And it's honoring that seat and working together and getting rid of all of these silos. For so long in our community, we just had silos. We had traditional legacy organizations that were out there speaking to legislators and sort of in the know. And then we had local organizations who were doing their best to help people actually live with the disease. And then we had individuals who, like you've been talking about, who didn't even share with, you know, neighbors and friends and schoolmates that they had the disease. And so all of that's kind of melted away. and is leaving us as has left us as a much, much stronger community. And I have to bring in what's happening even worldwide with sickle cell now. For so long, the people in Africa, we know where there's the largest population, and in India, were just accepting that they had sickle cell and that they'd have these babies who were born and were in pain, and that those babies died and they'd have another one. And maybe that one would, you know, live or not, but kind of an acceptance thing where now their government is saying, we need resources and we need to be helping people who have this condition, because they're looking at us here in America and saying they're living. So if they can live in America, right, we should be able to live in Africa. We should be able to live in India. And the people in America are looking over saying, well, we're living here and they should be. And so we've got more of a partnership forming now where I think that's a real change. I mean, it's hard to get your head around the fact that, you know, the babies go undiagnosed or they don't get penicillin and folic acid. I remember when I first found out, I said, why? It's so cheap. And then I was reminded on, you know, what these people were living on in compared to an American dollar. And it was something like some of them were living on pennies a day. So I'm really thrilled with the work that ASH is doing, and that the governments in Kenya and Nigeria are reaching out and working together. So globally, our voices have been heard, and it's going to make changes for generations to come.
Went from a movement to a force.
Exactly. I like that.
Someone said years ago, our future is so bright that we need sunglasses. So everybody pull your sunglasses out, because we're looking forward to what we can expect in the future and the changes that are going on. You know, it's exciting, it's exciting, it's exciting.
Yeah, we can't get discouraged. We can't get distracted. We can't lose sight of the goal. And the goal is living well. The goal is better treatments, and the goal ultimately is a cure.
And as Adrian always says, keep yourself as healthy as possible so that you're worthy of the cure.
So September and October are always very, very busy time for us, but it seems like it's, I don't know, double time this year.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It's almost overwhelming. There's so many things going on.
Well, we have, as always, we have our California meeting.
There are so many things happening across the country. One of the things that's getting ready to happen is the meeting that we have annually in California related to sickle cell disease.
This year, it's going to be bigger than ever. And some of the speakers have come from, actually, I think, across the, not only across the country, but across the world in order to attend. So that meeting reflects the changes, right, that we've been talking about. It's like physically embodying those changes.
What's exciting is that Dr. Elliot Vachinsky and Dr. Cage Johnson are keynote speakers there, and they're going to be sharing all of their experiences. For those of you who know them, they've been in sickle cell forever and have really made a difference, you know, in the sickle cell community.
I feel like they're royalty. They're sickle cell royalty, and they're going to be speaking with so many of the younger people this year, too. So it's sort of kind of a handoff.
Dr. Ken Bridges is also going to be there, isn't he?
Yes, from GBT.
Yeah, so we have a lot of folks that are going to be sharing their expertise.
Right.
And challenging us to consider research and consider treatment options. Right. And consider future direction.
Right. And they're doing a real deep dive this year into looking at diet and alternative treatments to meds. I mean, they're having yoga this year. We're doing conversations about, even more so, about meditation and where that fits.
And there's even going to be stuff on legislative.
Well, that's one we all need to hear about.
I can't wait for the opioid panel.
Oh, yeah, that's going to be exciting.
I'm on that one.
Particularly because we in California have just been involved in trying to have the bill change to include sickle cell disease as being exempt from all those opioid restrictions. So it should be an exciting panel, and I'm glad you're on it, Shabrian, so that you can share and help other folks who are being challenged by getting the treatment that they need when they need it.
So this is an example of the things that are happening and why it's important. I spoke to someone from the CDC last week, and I mentioned that we were having a problem, and the fact that the their actual report, which sort of kicked off this national concern, listed sickle cell as something, you know, that to be exempted, and that we were being turned away at ERs and at pharmacies, and really even being denied treatment for pain on hospital floors. And she just, I mean, looked at me with shock. She was like, well, how? I mean, that doesn't make sense. So again, us being able to be in the room with these people who write these reports and put it out and think that what they're saying is what's being implemented or understood, to actually hear from us about what's really happening. That was a surprise for me, because I just assumed that they wrote the report and they're the ones that are doing all the research, and of course they've had to hear what was going on. And particularly because they're a government agency, right? And it's the DEA who, of course, is working and stopping a lot of us from getting what we need by intimidating people. Between the FDA, the CDC, the NIH, you would think that they would be in sync, but they're not.
Do you really think the DEA is stopping people, or is that the interpretation of folks out there, that they don't want to run into problems with the DEA?
Well, I think what happened, and to be honest, I think early on when they were responding, because there were doctors out there doing the wrong thing. And we've seen some doctors that are like that. They won't take your pulse. I mean, this is, right? They would just say, you have sickle cell, and so here are your pain pills, right? I think they were few and far between. But I think there were doctors who were just writing scripts and writing scripts. I also think the DEA did a great job in identifying those docs and have most likely put all of them out of business already. And what we're having to do is that thing that happens, right, when something sort of takes on a life of its own. And as you said, there are now people who are afraid because they've heard stories of these things happening. But I think we have to make sure that they learn to be the difference between someone who has pain meds as part of their medical treatment versus someone who misuses opioids.
Frankly, I think that the issue does not lie with the DEA or the CDC, but it lies with our education system and how we educate our doctors and our nurses, and the way that sickle cell is introduced to them from the jump. And basically, you spend 3 to 4 years in school, you learn about sickle cell for a day or two, and the rest of the time you're not educated, you're warned. And in every scenario that they have, or almost every scenario, of how can you tell if you have a patient that's drug seeking, or how can you tell if you're dealing with an addict who's pretending to be a patient, sickle cell is the example. And whether or not we're the example of the legitimate patient, we are still pushed together in that pile of illegitimacy. And it's almost like this opioid epidemic is giving, I hate to say it this way, but permission to just live out what doctors and some nurses and some ER managers and hospital administrators already believe, period, that sickle cell patients are not in the pain that we claim to be in, that we are not, you know, in need of actual medical attention, but instead in need of rehab, that we are not patients living with chronic and acute pain, but instead we're just drug addicts who have found a legal way to gain the drug of our choice. And I find that very frustrating and insensitive and just all around foolish.
I want to thank you for that reminder, because we haven't talked about education. We've been talking about a lot of things. It's becoming more and more apparent that we have to do a better job of educating everyone on sickle cell. And when I say we, I mean everybody. I mean us as patients, us as caregivers, us as educators. I think we have to sort of support the concept of education, right? And so that docs, no matter where they fall in their role as caregivers, care providers, that they have knowledge about sickle cell disease. And even if that knowledge is that this is a very complicated disease and I don't know anything about it, but I know the number to call to talk to someone who does know about it. And I'm hoping that many, many times it's really hard to get funding for things like this or get regulations for things like this, but because we finally have the ear of legislation, that we will get that. But we have to remember to keep that, as Marissa, like I said, so eloquently stated, we've got to remember to get people to fight for that.
And I'm in agreement with you, Marissa, about lack of education, because what you see, and I can remember being in school and getting maybe a couple of paragraphs on sickle cell disease, and I think everybody else gets about the same thing. Fortunately, Adrian and I have been involved with USC with educating the medical students, and they're now getting a little bit more. One of the niceties of it is not only are they getting textbook stuff, but they're getting an education from a professor on sickle cell disease, and then we've been allowed to bring in a person with sickle cell disease and the person's husband who can speak on how it affects the family and how it affects that person. So there are being some changes done, and fortunately ASH is pushing changes in education related to sickle cell disease, and that will filter down from just doctors to nurses. Because I think probably the most important person to educate is the nurse. Because being a nurse, I know that we can change the whole climate of how people with sickle cell disease or any other condition are treated. So that it's imperative that we make sure that they have the information and that they understand sickle cell disease, because it's them that says, well, I believe this person is in pain, or I do not believe this person is in pain. And so we actually probably need to change our focus a lot on who we press to really, really, truly understand sickle cell disease.
Well, okay, so we've got our marching orders for the next year. It'll be interesting to see where we are in September of 2019. I would say that last year I could not have predicted that we would have come this far this quickly. And given that, I'm hoping that I can say the same thing next year, that I could not have foreseen us coming this far this quickly.
Keep your running shoes on.
Keep up the faith.
The best is yet to come.
Thank you, Pat Corley, Marissa Kors, and Shabrianne Howard for joining us today on Access Advocacy. We'll be back in a moment on thepowerofvoices.com. We're just about out of time, but before we go, I wanted to let you know that you can learn more about our organization on our website, accessadvocacy.org, or on the Access Advocacy Facebook page. That's AXIS advocacy.org. Join us again next Tuesday on thepowerofvoices.com at noon Pacific, or listen anytime on demand at accessadvocacy.org. You'll find all our programs there. I'm Adrienne Shapiro. Thank you for listening.
Keep on pushing.